person of the board is not digging for roots in the shadows. There's no dying of hunger stare in eyes of chief executive officer of petroleum. Somebody else is sinking into spring freeze of the soil. Somebody else is evaporating.
This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. The nation is focused on the death of the 1,000th U.S. citizen in Iraq and the continuing violence in that country as a result of U.S. invasion and occupation. Estimates of deaths of Iraqi civilian casualties are more than 10 times that number, and we don't even have good numbers on those wounded, maimed, and mutilated in Iraq. In the midst of all this violence, it's sometimes easy for us to lose sight of the despair of the millions of Iraqis who are trying to feed their families, who are most probably unemployed, and if employed, are forbidden to organize unions to secure better benefits and wages. The Iraqi economy has collapsed, and neither U.S. media or government are addressing this issue. We recently talked with Abdullah Mushin, foreign representative of the Iraqi Federation of Workers' Trade Unions.
Officially, the U.S. occupation of Iraq ended on June 28, 2004, but in reality, the United States is still in charge. Not only do 138,000 troops remain in control of the streets, but the 100 orders of L. Paul Bremer III remain to control the economy. Could you please tell us more about these orders and how they impact on the working class of Iraq?
While there is a foreign troop in our country, and particularly from both the U.S. and the U.K., then the sense of a country having real sovereignty is not complete. And therefore, we as a trade union movement, we are struggling alongside, in addition to our job, as we focus on the industrial role, i.e. working condition, wages, and collective bargaining, and so forth. We are campaigning for Iraq to assume a full and real sovereignty. So, now, that's one thing. In regard to the decrees, laws that have been passed by Mr. Bremer, those decrees are still in place and still are the law that will govern some of those laws. It's not in help of the Iraqi working people and specifically working class. When you think, if they manage to pass certain law, why can't they then abolish 1987 law? That is still law. It's still being applied in Iraq. And we as a trade union movement, as the IFTU, are saying that we have organizing now 12 national unions. Only 6 of those unions we have managed to hold for them open and free conferences in Baghdad during June. The other 6, we cannot because the law still does not permit us, though we have a strong union formation in key areas of Iraq economy, such as the oil and gas, transport, and railway. Yet those unions, though they are openly operating inside Iraq, openly are working, and they have membership, you know, goes up to 1,000, yet cannot hold their conferences to elect democratically their own legitimate bodies that will govern unions during that. So, yes, we think while the occupation authority, when it was there, managed to pass laws that will maintain it is or enhance and consolidate it is political, economical drive, certain law, oppressive law that passed by the former regime of Saddam Hussein that deprived worker from organizing formal are being still not abolished. So we think this is a disgrace. We think this is wrong. And we have been campaigning for this to be abolished. And now we are campaigning for this interim government to take into account two key areas of interest to us. First thing, labor code. The second thing is the issue of unemployment. They have to formulate real policies and implement real policies in dealing with the issue of employment. They have to employ people. They have to find them jobs.
What about the issues of the economic imprint of the Bush administration and its effect on workers?
Mr. Bush, when he ordered his troops to go and invade Iraq, he did not do for the sake of Iraqis or for the benefit of Iraqis. He has an economic agenda. That economic agenda, if I may call it, is a fundamentalist market agenda. And we knew Mr. Bush has a plan, but Mr. Bush failed when he entered in Iraq. It was not that easy. He did not find that people were hugging him with roses. No, the people of Iraq had enough of Saddam Hussein. The people of Iraq also knew that the Republican administration did not come or is not coming in here to liberate them, as they were saying. They come in here because they have their own agenda, and that Saddam Hussein did not fit that agenda. We knew. So, and therefore, we are fully aware, as in IFTU, as the people of Iraq, that Mr. Bush has an agenda. I don't think he will succeed, because, in a sense, in here, not to say that we are stronger than him. No, of course, he has all the military might that he could squash anybody he wants, you know. He can't, because he had 17 months, and they couldn't really implement those market policies, privatizing the key areas of the economy, such as the oil, railway, education, and health. They just can't. There is enormous opposition to this. Now, within this in mind, Iraq has been devastated for the last four decades due to internal and external war. Iraq has experienced almost 14 years of unjust economic sanction that deprived Iraq not only food and basic necessities, but it deprived Iraq a key industry from moving forward with the impact and advantage of technologies. So now, the IFTU and most of the Iraqi progressive and democratic forces at Iraq are opposing privatization.
There were supposed to have been billions of dollars spent by the U.S. to rebuild the infrastructure of Iraq. Has that started? It seems as if that one project never seems to begin.
Congress has agreed to 18.2 something billion of reconstruction of Iraq. Of that, something it's 2. Something just for the reconstruction of the oil industry. Forgive me if I talk about the oil industry, because it's 97% of Iraq wealth is from oil now, and that will remain at least for the next couple of decades as the key source of Iraq wealth of Iraq. In a sense, to put it in other words, that will feed Iraq. So oil to us is important. However, they haven't spent nothing on modernizing the oil industry. But what they spend? They spend a lot of money on maintaining the occupation. And we think that is a shamble. We think that is really wrong. In addition to that, those 2 billion money that were allocated to the oil ministry was not given to the oil ministry and the people who run the oil ministry themselves to spend the money where it's needed and where it's necessary. I to spend it on the new infrastructure of the oil industry, I bring in new technologies, buying new spare parts. No, this money remained in the hand of the occupation authorities and they spend it as they wish. To be frank with you, yes, there's a lot of waste of money of this. You could look to in all aspects. I mean, I just had a private meeting with some of the Iraqis who went in there to help for the reconstruction of the education. And he just came back and told us there was enormous waste of money. It's been spent without anybody, you know, and we think this is a disgrace and this is terrible. While a country has went through so much chaos, decades of oppression, wars, and now there is an estimate, according to the IFTU, of course, 50% of the people of Iraq, mostly are young people, are without jobs, without hopes. You know, of course, so it is a big job. While the issue remains like this, a lot of people without jobs, without hopes, are subjugated to so many of these fundamentalist elements who are raising key concerns, of course. I'm not in here denying the concern. Here it is 18 months and nothing has happened. The situation is worse in Iraq. And we are campaigning now to try to find a way. We are calling up on the interim government to adopt policies to readdress this crucial issue, the employment. We are also calling up an international labor organization, centers around the world, to assist us to make this is possible. At least, if they can, I know they cannot find jobs or divine jobs for the people, but they could provide some form of assistance us to open trade union centers and employment centers around the country, that young people they could come for a training, for education. And if it's not just for that, at least for just a chat, for just to sit and find a place, that will keep them away from those extremists. So we are working, and with your help, we may be able to keep Iraq together and Iraq that will prosper and, you know, Iraq for the Iraqis.
We really haven't asked about the ability for the Iraqis to organize into unions at this point.
With us, there are three key challenges are facing now, really. The first key challenge, which is facing trade unions now, and the IFTU in particular, and the other formation, is a labor code. This is of a fundamental importance to us. We do not have a labor code that will protect us in terms of collective. So this is a key area that we are campaigning for. It's a fundamental principle. We are pushing the hardest with the help of the ILO, the Iraqi interim government, to enshrine a labor code that will encompass key fundamental ILO convention. in addition to forced labor should be totally outlawed in Iraq. Child labor should be totally outlawed, and you know, so those are one of the key areas that we are campaigning for now. In addition, of course, to building unions, we have been moving, and lately only 6 unions of our 12 have managed to hold their national conferences in Baghdad openly. So that they have managed to consolidate their structure a little bit, but they still at the beginning a formation, and any support, any help that is very appreciated. The third key area is assisting Iraqi political forces for moving, taking forward the political process taking place in order for Iraq to achieve its real and full sovereignty. Maybe this is a difficult task. Maybe this is the hardest task we have. But we are happy to take this challenge forward, and we're happy to help for Iraq to retain its and restore its sovereignty.
And for those who want to follow this progress further, these challenges to the Iraqi people, if you could give us the website of the Iraqi Federation of Workers' Trade Unions.
Thank you very much. The website is www.IraqiTradeUnions.org. I guess it's simple, and suggestions, comments are welcomed, and articles or anything. We are very pleased to receive.
Abdullah Mashin, Foreign Representative of the Iraqi Federation of Workers' Trade Unions, we wish you well and solidarity. Certainly, you have it from the working class.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Please, we are grateful for the support of those people, especially, I just mentioned now, the 500,000 people who marched into the street of New York, calling for Mr. Bush to withdraw his troops, calling for Mr. Bush to stop killing innocent Iraqi. Pass our regard and our gratitude to our comrades in the Stop the War, U.S. Labor Against the War. We just had a significant contribution from there, and a financial contribution of $5,000. We are grateful for them.
It's always somebody else. Somebody else. It's always somebody else. Somebody else.
And now we go to Nadia Molina and Margie McCune. Nadia Molina is Executive Director of the Workplace Project, and Margie McCune, Executive Director of the New York Immigration Coalition.
And despite Schwarzenegger's welcome to immigrants at the Republican National Convention, the Republican version of immigration reform is just one of many recent steps backwards, tightening the grip of repression in immigrant worker communities across the country.
Now to our interview. Margie McCune, what are the issues on the agenda for people who are concerned with this super exploited group of workers, people who built this country, the immigrant workers, and now the new immigrant workers? What are the issues they face?
What a question.
But you can handle it. I know that.
No, 3 minutes or less.
Every month, it seems. Well, you know, I think it's interesting to be having this conversation after the Republican National Convention here in New York, and I think that one of the things that it sort of put there in stark relief was that the two parties have a very, very different approach to legalization for undocumented workers, and obviously that the issue of legalization is at the top of the agenda for folks who are working with the undocumented population and for people who are undocumented themselves. There's a whole range of other issues then for a group like ours that at the same time is also working with Muslim, Arab, and South Asian populations who have been really horribly affected by the backlash post 9/11, really, really just sad and outrageous set of policies and practices that have come out of the Justice Department with, you know, secret roundups and detentions and deportations that really have done zero for us in terms of national security, have ripped apart a lot of families and devastated whole neighborhoods and communities. And then there was the whole agenda that immigrant groups had been pushing for years prior to 9/11, talking about wages, working conditions, investments in their communities that they all have been waiting for several decades now to see realized. Things like the minimum wage in a place like New York where, you know, workers are making the same here in a high-priced state like New York as they are in places like Mississippi. And issues with No Child Left Behind, the horrible impact that high-stakes testing is having on limited English proficient and other immigrant kids. The dropout and the push-out rate in schools in New York is skyrocketing, and it's very interesting to us because we do a tremendous amount of voter registration and voter education work in our coalition, and consistently education is the number one issue outside of immigration that all of the immigrant families that are part of our network are concerned about, because it's their kids that are in the, you know, in the most overcrowded and least resourced classrooms, and their kids are being counseled as early as 9th and 10th grade just to leave school and see if they can get a GED, because these schools just can't even be bothered to try and figure out how to help them acquire English and pass these new high-stakes tests. And I guess I can't move off of the list without talking about healthcare access either, because immigrant workers are, you know, you were saying as you opened up, some of the, you know, that they're in the most exploited, most underpaid industries and sectors of the economy. It almost goes without saying that they don't have access to healthcare. And we have the Bush administration having the nerve to come out with a September 1st policy right in the middle of the RNC, when they had Schwarzenegger talking about, you know, how this was the party for immigrants. And they were about to put in place on September 1st this proposal that would only allow this piece of Medicaid funding for emergency room services to flow down to states and hospitals if they would report undocumented immigrants who were using emergency room services. And then I think somebody got wind that this was very bad politics, and so they quietly said that they were going to take another few weeks before they implemented that, you know. But this is the sort of stuff that, on the one hand, we've got this talk in an election year about what type of legalization programs the two parties are talking about, and then you have these varying types of scorched earth, exploitative, you know, driving people away from services type policies that continue to be put out there and not really effectively challenged at the national or even, sadly, at the state levels.
Wow.
And let's see how this plays out on the local level. Nadia Molina from Long Island, well, you're not from Farmingville, but we ought to talk about Farmingville a lot. So tell us what's happening not only in Farmingville, which is always a hot spot, but the rest of Long Island also, how all these trends play out there.
Well, I would certainly agree with Margie with regard to legalization always being a top issue. And something that's an issue, I think, at a federal level and definitely we're seeing more of at a local level, is the increasing cooperation between police and immigration. And so while sort of federal legislation hasn't passed about that, we're seeing that in Suffolk County, for example, the county executive, he's talking now about how he's starting to implement a pilot project where he's planning to have police do, while not officially enforcing immigration, certainly doing a lot of the checking for immigration as soon as people are arrested or charged with anything. And obviously it's something that will create more fear of police among the immigrant community. And while they try to spin it as something that's just for, you know, only for the people who are accused, we've had situations where workers who've been, for example, face unpaid wages and have confronted the police or have been attacked by their employer. Their employer makes an accusation against them, and suddenly the worker is no longer a victim. He's, you know, accused as well. And in this kind of situation, Suffolk County will then be checking out what his immigration status is. And so it's a very, very dangerous situation that we're in, and we're starting to see what it is really that the county executive is doing. They're trying to act as if nothing is going on, but the truth is they seem to be implementing almost word for word some of what the most vehement anti-immigrant groups have been asking for all along.
Nadia, I'm also interested in one of the significant issues now of trying to, and while it may not affect you in particular, I can't help but point out the horrific issues relevant to the border, where certainly there's some indication that immigration officials and policing agents can literally summarily deport people on the border as well. So the whole policing apparatus, please address that.
Yeah, what we're starting to see is a few years ago, even if a worker was arrested, accused of anything, he could be arrested and processed, and then he, you know, would probably get out on bail, and, you know, the next day, let's say. Now, a worker who is arrested, as soon as he is put into the jail, let's say to stay there overnight, he will immediately have his record cross-checked with INS. And so there are workers who, in the last couple of weeks, a couple of workers who had we thought had disappeared because we couldn't find, we didn't know where they were. We knew they had been arrested, and then we had no indication of where they had gone. It turns out they had been taken to immigration, one in Queens and another one in New Jersey. And so it's just happening at incredible speed where there's no more innocence until proven guilty. People are just, if the police wants to take you away, they do. And it's something that didn't exist a few years ago and has been increasing and increasing now. And now we're just seeing, I think we're starting to see the county executives taking more credit for it, but it seems to be something that they've been quietly implementing across the board. We're also seeing things like the use of gangs, or the issue of gangs, is being used to attack the entire immigrant community. So as an example, in one area where supposedly the police are trying to crack down on gangs, we had the police go to the corner where there were day laborers and actually stop a couple of the workers, tell them to pull up their shirts and take pictures of them in order to take pictures of their tattoos, even though these weren't gang members and they didn't have any tattoos on, you know, that had anything to do with gang. But they feel that the police can do this with impunity because they know that most of these workers aren't going to say anything. But this is the kind of thing that, whether you're a gang member or or just an immigrant worker who's trying to make a living, it doesn't seem to make much of a difference for the police.
Margie, yeah. When we talk about deportations, I can't help but think about Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Republican Convention, his embrace of all his fellow immigrants. Obviously, I mean, when he came over, he didn't have to worry about that. There must have been a very high quota for Austrian immigrants into this country. What's happening with immigration reform? It doesn't seem to be a front-burner issue in this election.
Yeah. Well, you know, it cracks me up about his immigrant success story. I mean, he came over here as Mr. Universe already. You know, for the party to act as though somehow, you know, he's this immigrant of humble origins and sort of came here and, you know, kind of worked his way up and, you know, that other immigrants can follow his example. It's really, really absurd how quickly, I know that our whole sort of country's, you know, debate and culture tends to be pretty ahistorical, but this is going, you know, this whole thing with Schwarzenegger is a little beyond the pale. I think one of the toughest places or the toughest issues we have right now is that you've got politicians, as Nadia was saying, like the Suffolk County exec and people like Attorney General Ashcroft, they know that the number one issue for the American public is still security. And so long as they connect up what they're doing in terms of these repressive anti-immigrant schemes, as long as they connect it up to public security, that it sells with the public, because the public is not really discerning and not really thinking about what would actually make them safer. And so this idea that we're going to call anything that even these very, very low-level things, whether it's immigrants who used a fake Social Security number to get a driver's license, or immigrants who were here and just working illegally, you know, everybody knows it's happening. Everybody knows there's 8 to 11 million undocumented people in the country. If they were ordered deported, you know, the Attorney General has put them into the National Crime Database now, which is accessed millions of times a day by police officers around the country. These are the sorts of people, or these are the sorts of quote-unquote violations that the Attorney General, that the Suffolk County exec are trying to say that by going after these kinds of immigrants that somehow they're making people safer. And, of course, they're not. These are all people who were here. They don't mean to do us any harm. They are simple garden variety immigrant workers who are doing all the jobs that keep places like Metropolitan New York steaming along, keep the local economies going, keep everybody able to work, able to have just all sorts of essential functions taken care of in their lives. But these are the people that they are going after. Nobody's asking, are you actually finding the needle in the haystack, the one in several million immigrants who might mean to do the country harm, or are you just adding more hay to the haystack? And all the Attorney General is doing is piling the hay on the haystack, having local law enforcement go after and arrest or track down people who have absolutely nothing serious in their background as a violation. They are only here as undocumented workers who happen to have the bad luck to come in contact with law enforcement, and then these same politicians run up to the microphone the next day saying, look, we're keeping you safer, we're deporting these people. It's just so extraordinary to me that this is happening at exactly the same time when both parties have agreed that we need a legalization program. It's like, you know, like they're just not connecting the two sides of the equation. If we've all acknowledged, finally, you know, for very different reasons, the Republicans because they want to see corporations have access to cheap labor, and on the Democrat side that they want to be more responsive for a whole variety of reasons to this population. Either way, they've both agreed that we need a legalization program, but at the same time, they turned a blind eye to the fact that we are criminalizing low-level immigration violations every day with the most serious penalties that we can possibly think of, and that we have these policy train wrecks at the state level where, you know, we're probably going to legalize people over the next several years. The Congress will get around to it. Meanwhile, we're going to take driver's licenses away from millions of them and make them be out on the road without any car insurance and without legitimate driver's licenses. It's, you know, it's really this unbelievable train wreck, you know, at the local level where the federal government just has ignored or not had the courage to deal with this issue. It looks like they're finally maybe getting their courage together, of course, after the election, not beforehand. But in the meantime, we have all these incredible sort of dislocations that are happening locally, both with deportations and with issues like the driver's license, because we're really not connecting up both sides of the debate and saying that we can't be criminalizing and deporting the very people today that we're saying we're going to legalize tomorrow.
It just seems, as we've had discussions in our organization as well about this, and it just seems that it's really part of a it really is part of a political calculation, both at a local level and I guess at a national level, where politicians are seeing that they the last time that a legalization was passed in 86, the amnesty, it was also, it came at the same time with a compromise, which was employer sanctions. And so it's sort of, you know, they give you something on one end, and then they do something horrible on the other. And it seems that at this point, one of the things that seems to be the sort of balance, and that I imagine is going to be part of the negotiations once there is a real discussion about legalization, is going to be what kind of law enforcement measures can we put into place. And so it seems to me that part of this is going to be giving part of what the anti-immigrant groups want. And if part of that is really, okay, we'll legalize X amount of people, but we're also at the same time going to crack down in a significant way using police and using all, you know, all of the methods that they can, I think that that's going to be a serious issue that the immigrant, that all of us have to look at as when the discussion comes up.
Well, I wish we had more time to explore these issues. Margie McHugh, Executive Director of the New York City Immigration Coalition, and Nadja Molina, Executive Director of the Workplace Project. How can people find out more about the things that you've been speaking about and get in touch with you? Margie?
Our website is www.thenyic.org.
Nadja?
People can call us at 516-565-565. 5377, especially if people are interested in volunteering. We have a lot of unpaid wages cases, and we're always looking for volunteers for support in that area.
Dan, Margie McHugh, Nadja Molina, it's been a pleasure to share some time with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with
Mimi Rosenberg
and myself, Ken Nash. See you next week.
Good night, Ken.
Good night, Mimi.
That